If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thanks for tuning in. My name is Dominic Swantoski. I'm the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. So most things don't turn out the way you had them planned. That's life. But as you're driving down the dirt road towards your favorite trout water, thoughts and plans unfold in your mind. And while preparing for a destination trip, you expect success. Once you're finally traveling halfway across the country to that river you've wanted to fish for decades, visions of the trout you'll catch kind of take over. Your hopes and dreams of what will end up in the net are a primary motivator. And aside from the fish, you might even be enthusiastic about a new fly rod, a new pair of waders, or maybe an experimental leader that you tied up. For all of this, and for the fishing itself, we expect success. We assume the positive. I really don't think many anglers leave the house thinking, well, this is probably going to suck, but I'll go do it anyway. Because as my friend Rich Alsippi loved to say, the fisherman is eternally hopeful. Think about it. That's the truth. Good anglers are optimists. Why? Because fishing is filled with so much failure that anyone who stays in the game learns to look on the bright side, to see beyond the fish count, to get past tangled tippet, broken reels, lost flies in a tree, and soaking wet clothes from falling in again. So things go bad out there. A trout river forces you into mistakes. So having good systems for how you manage gear, how you approach the water, and even what clothes you wear in certain weather all helps to minimize the disasters that befall every angler. And I mean it. Those kinds of disasters happen. And in some ways, we can avoid them. But the most common difficulty we encounter out there is one that we can't really avoid. Sometimes, trout don't want to eat. The fishing is just tough. So you try everything you planned for. You know what should work, and you fished it. But when it doesn't work, what do? That's what we're here to talk about tonight. How do you handle the tough days? How can you turn it around and start catching fish? And let's assume that's the goal, right? I mean, another way to deal with slow fishing is to grab a beer at the tailgate or find a sunny patch on the grass with a nice log and have a good bank sit. That's great too. And that might help you regroup, refocus, and remember the good things in life that come along with a day of fishing outside of shaking hands with a trout. But every angler wants to catch them. That's why we're out there. So when the going gets tough, how do we fix it? What are the strategies? I have my full crew of fishing buddies with me here tonight, and let's introduce them by answering a listener question. Austin Dando, you want to read this one, please?
Absolutely. This one comes from Luke Anston from Connecticut. Hey now, Troutbitten crew.
Hey now. Hey now. Hey now, Luke.
Thanks for everything you guys do. I'm 29, just got settled into a new job, and I have enough time and some money to get into fly fishing. I'm mostly fishing for trout, and I've learned a lot about the options of the fly rod by following the stuff Troutbitten puts out. Love your approach to versatility. It makes sense. And every day I'm fishing, I look for chances to change between the different fly types, or streamer, wet flies, nymphs, and dry flies. Here's my question. I've heard you guys talk about fly rods before, when you've covered different methods. But if each of you can choose just one rod to fish all year long, which is it right now? Thanks again for Troutbitten. Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, Luke, that's a very common question. I mean, in my email inbox, 5, 6, 8, 10 times a week, it's what rod? I have a couple articles on that. But none of us want to be forced into just one rod. What do you think? Who wants to go? What do you have? Here's Trevor Smith right there.
Yeah. Hey.
Doctor's in.
So I have a Thomas & Thomas 3-weight 10-foot, and I think I'd go with that. I mean, I've fished either a 10-foot 3-weight or a 10-foot 4-weight for the past 4 or 5 years, almost exclusively when it comes to that desire for versatility. And we have a lot of smaller water around here that I get to fish a lot more often than I do some of the bigger waterways that exist in Pennsylvania. So I really do like that 10-3. It's a pretty fast actioned 3-weight. So if it was any weaker in action or any slower, I would want it to be a 4-weight, I think. But it acts a lot like the 10-4 Hardy in terms of its action. And so
did you say it's the contact two?
You know, it's the contact two. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
It's a little stiffer, isn't it?
It is. It's a little, I would say it's a little bit like a faster action than the contact one was. Mm-hmm. And I had the contact two in a 4-weight, 10.5-foot. I didn't like that as much as I like the 10-3.
Joe Goodspeed was on a Cortland podcast. I think it was this week. That's when I was listening to it. And he was talking about the differences between the contact one and the contact two. He said the contact one broke a lot.
Interesting. I did break mine twice, but
it's a little stiffer. Did you? The one or the two?
Yeah, but I mean, in fairness, I think any rod would have broke with
you
what
did
I did.
Something
with it.
Dumb.
I think I watched you break it.
I fell in the dark. Did you watch?
Cardinal versus rod didn't win.
No, it was a fall in the dark onto like, I just like sheared.
I watched that.
I sheared it off right above the handle. I went down with all my weight on it was a bad break.
All right, so we know you're not using that rod for night fishing, though, right? It'd be tough to be locked into just one rod.
That's what I was going to say. Is
no,
if we're saying across the whole year,
Josh, I mean, Darling, here you go.
Hi. If we're saying across the whole year, then I'd probably do like a 9.5-foot 5-weight, and I don't really care who makes it, honestly. If it's
within reason,
Within
reason. I give you a moonshine?
Maybe not an option.
How about a fiberglass?
No, but any higher end rod that's gonna be built well, I think is probably gonna be okay for me. I've not necessarily had the opportunity to try out every rod out there, and so I fish with what I've gotten, and it works. But in terms of weight and length, if I'm gonna include the night fishing part of the year in this as well, then I'm certainly going to go 5-weight and a little bit shorter, 9.5, I'd say.
It's kind of a tough question, what Luke asked. Yeah.
I think it's really easy.
Go ahead, Bill. Deli.
I think we're going to agree on this, actually. 9-9, Hardy, Ultralight, LL.
Yeah, yeah.
4-weight, 9-9.
It's a good rod.
I use it probably 80% of the time when I fish.
Yeah.
And
it's easy if you only day fish.
Yes.
Was that a cut?
If you're scared of the dark.
Hey now. Oh.
You got him.
That was subtle, but it was there.
Shots fired.
God, catch enough fish with the lights on, you'll be content.
Hit me where it hurts.
I think the heart of his question is not to like pigeonhole us into one rod. I think he really wants to know what's the most versatile. So I think honestly, I think we should answer it as if we're
Stop giving him the benefit of the doubt. He's trying to make this hard on us.
I guess Bill said like 80% of the time I choose that rod. Well,
right.
I think that's the answer to the question. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what do I choose the most? Right. Yeah, sure. I night fish and I don't want to fish that hardy ultralight 9'9" four weight for night fishing. But well, like you, Bill, I'm like 90% of the time on that rod. I also have the 10-foot ultralight. And honestly, I hardly see or feel a difference. They're very, very close. And actually the 10-foot ends up in my hands more often.
Actually, they're pretty much the same. Just send one over here and I'll give it similar. A try.
I actually like the grip better. I have the prototype for that 9'9", and it's a little thin.
Must be nice.
It's got to be nice to be the trout bitten guy.
Yeah, whatever. What about you, Austin? What's your answer?
So his question is kind of framed as though he's just looking to start. So I'm going to give two options. If you're not sure how dedicated or how much you want to spend right away, my kind of mid-level recommendation is a 10-foot four weight TFO BBK. And I think that's now renamed to the Legacy. And that is a great all-around rod that has a lifetime warranty on it that you can break or not worry about busting up if you're just trying to get started. And it's not going to hurt the bank account too badly.
Nice.
Myself, I've been fishing the 10-foot five weight H3 for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And I personally like a stiffer rod, a little bit heavier. That versatility comes into effect when you can throw some larger streamers, things like that, weighted nymph rigs, yeah, big bobbers, whatever. So I like that rod.
Mm-hmm. Your left Grobe, Matt Grobe out in Montana, what do you got? Got a trout bitten hat on, I like that.
I'll tell you what, I'm not fishing, Luke. I'm not fishing glass, and I'm not fishing bamboo.
I don't need that. Come on, Matt.
Don't everybody come on, send Matt a glass rod for Christmas.
Last week.
Yeah. I'm a 10-foot four weight guy. Currently, I'm fishing a R. Winston Super, but I'm kind of with I fished a bunch of different 10-foot fours. I like the Helios. Really like Sage ESN. I think it's a really good rod.
They have a three weight and I have a five weight
on them. But overall, 80% of the time I'm fishing a 10-4. Mm-hmm. And I like the Winston.
No kidding.
So
honestly, don't have any Winston rods. I've cast them. They're clean. They're nice. Very,
they're smooth.
Yeah. Real crisp. I don't know. Yep. There's 100 different ways to describe that action, but that's nice.
Slick. Yeah.
They are quality rods.
Did you get any hate for the first? Did you get any spawn hate?
Yeah. That's a good question. No. It's only been out for what?
A day.
24 hours, right?
Just today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last week, we talked nothing about spawning yet. And we said we like to fish during the spawn, not over spawning fish, but during the spawn because of our waters, we can avoid those trout. Go back, listen to the episode, everybody. And, yeah, I mean, when you put something like that out there, just the title, and even I put a question on Instagram, do you fish during the spawn? That question, that title, trout fishing in the spawn, is definitely going to have a lot of people that are going to, respond without listening to the podcast or trying to understand our perspective necessarily. And yeah. I expected some of that, haven't gotten it yet. And that's cool.
Not yet.
The results of the poll are
heavy
majority fish during spawn.
Yeah, 70-something to 20-something right now. That might change, obviously.
Yeah.
I think there's about 50 people that responded so far. Everybody answered, right? Everybody. So, Luke, those are our favorite rods. And we don't want to be narrowed down to just one, but those are your answers. All right, guys, let's jump into the topic. What do you do when the trout won't eat? How do you save the toughest days on the water? And we all have them. Can we acknowledge that right away? Everybody have tough days out there?
Oh my goodness.
Yep. Yeah.
No. Dominate every day.
Come on.
He also never falls in.
Never. No, he hasn't fallen in superstar. Like 2 years. He's a superstar. No, I mean,
I've fallen on land 3 times in the last 6 months. I don't know, fall in a stream.
The water helps catch his fall when he does stumble.
That's right.
No, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions out there is that like, oh, some of these top guys, they never have these tough days. They're always catching trout. First of all, I think the term or the idea of top guys is ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Just because somebody wrote a book or because I have a website called Trout Bitten doesn't mean I catch any more fish than anybody else. I just kind of know the tactics maybe more inside and out than other people, because I've had more than some other people, because I've had more time on the water. Anyway, we all have tough days. And the point is, how do you save those toughest days, right? How do you turn it around? Instead of going home and just giving up, basically, how have you turned around those unproductive times and started putting trout in the net? Let's talk about that. That's our discussion. That's our topic. What are your strategies, guys? Open discussion. Let's go.
Cover more water.
Right on. That's a good one. Deli says,
elaborate.
Deli goes 40 mile an hour up the stream.
That's right.
Yeah, he already covers a lot of water.
Cherry picking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's your everyday, Bill.
Must grow wings.
If it's really bad, I'll cover more water.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times if it's bad, I'm just going to stream or fish and try to at least figure out what, even if I move a couple fish, then I might learn what water type they're in. Mm. And if I'm throwing streamers and I'm moving, I don't know, let's say I cover a half mile, three quarters of a mile of a river or a stream that's, let's say, 20 to 30 foot wide. Mm-hmm. And after that half a mile or three quarters of a mile, I don't see anything or don't move anything, then mm-hmm. I might go the inverse and then find a hole and then just cycle through a bunch of flies.
I like that.
I think my first question is, like, why do I think it's bad? And is it because of a modifiable variable that I can answer with one of like a technique change or a fly change or a type of water, a water type change? Or is it something that I may not have control over? You know, like, is the water warmer and the trout's metabolism are shutting down? Or is the water really, really cold and their metabolism mm-hmm. shutting down? And so even good success today might mean slow fishing. Or do I think I should be having good fishing and I just need to figure out the what I'm trying to say is I want to differentiate between a day that I think could be good and a day that I think is just going to have to reset some expectations so that I'm not beating my head against the wall thinking I'm doing something wrong versus something that I could change.
Trevor, you're always the one, and this is a good thing, that brings up, it depends. Well, it's conditional. Well, it's nuanced.
Yeah, I know.
It is, dude. Right?
That's my job.
Right? I could go fish.
It's real life.
A piece of water that I haven't fished for 10 years. I mean, let's say I've never fished. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Maybe it's marginal water, not listed as class A, maybe not even listed as natural reproduction on our Pennsylvania Fish Commission website. And I might go fish it. Why not? Right? And then my expectations are going to be real low. Yeah. And I could go, well, that's why I'm not catching fish. There's hardly any in here. But then again, if I go fish the river that's down the hill from my house, and it's cloudy and water temps are great right now. And there's water in the river. Like, come on. Yeah. Like, why am I not catching fish right now?
Exactly.
Right? Those are two very different things. That's
super
cool
different.
Point that out.
Yeah.
Whether it's after a fishing trip or at a backyard fire, you can bet the Trout Bitten crew has a case of New Trail Broken Heels along with us. It's honestly our favorite beer. This hazy IPA is smooth and full-bodied. Hand-selected citra hops lead to notes of bright clementine and juicy ruby red grapefruit. Broken Heels is a keeper. New Trail beer is proudly brewed in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and delivered cold to your favorite craft beer retailer every week. At New Trail, it's not about being the best angler. It's about getting out there. So enjoy nature's moments and reward yourself for a day well fished with New Trail Broken Heels. It's Trout Bitten's favorite beer. For over a decade, Smith Creek's high-quality fly fishing accessories have helped anglers just like you to keep your gear in easy reach, free up your hands, and keep our waters clean. Their award-winning Rod Clip Plus now has two ways to attach it to your vest or pack, making it easier to tie a fly, change a hook, or release your catch. All Smith Creek products are built guide tough, using rugged materials, and backed by their strong commitment to customer service. This fall, Smith Creek is introducing even more new products, so keep checking their website at smithcreek.co for more information and special offers from now through Christmas.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I mostly agree with Dell.
Yeah.
I think earlier in on the day, if it's like beginning of the day and it feels like, all right, we've got low light conditions, it should be good, kind of like what you were describing, Dom, then I'm more likely to like cycle through flies, cycle through water types in the area and fish certain places harder, cycle through techniques, try streamers, try dries, hit the banks, all that stuff. But if we're talking about like it's been an hour and a half, I've not caught anything and the conditions are good, then then I pretty much switch into entirely, I'm going to move and that's going to be what I do. And I'm going to have two confidence flies on. I'm going to have a big one on and I'm going to have a tiny one on to cover my bases. And I'm just going to move. And the big thing is because I feel like you never really know. Like if all the conditions are good, then you don't really know what the reason is for why the fish aren't biting. And it could be as simple as like somebody was fishing before you.
Sure.
You know, good point. And I mean, maybe whether that's that day or the night before, whatever it is, and you don't know when they got out. So relocating could be everything because all of a sudden you're fishing fish that they were fishing for, and then you're fishing fish that they weren't fishing for 10 feet up, you know? And so you just don't know. I feel like every bit of movement in whether it's a different water type or just a different like bend, different level in the stream, it integrates kind of a new hope in me to keep going. But I'm big on the, if it's been a couple hours and nothing, then I'm going to move and I'm going to have two confidence flies on, big and small.
I think hope is a really big deal there, Josh. When days are slow, outside of the days like Trevor mentioned, where maybe it's just some extreme environmental condition, I choose to believe that the fish are eating something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they aren't, but in my mind, I have to believe that I could stumble upon the one thing that's going to turn it on.
Right.
So being able to think that way, because it's if you go for hours and you catch no fish, it's really easy to get sloppy and start giving bad presentations. True. And that just compounds throughout the day. So having hope and having a reason and changing to kind of spur that hope further along really makes an angler durable through those slow times.
Durable.
Yeah. And I like found that. For me that, and I think it is all playing into like, what am I going to have confidence in? What am I going to have hope in? Is I found that for me, moving increases that more than changing flies does almost always.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's usually my go-to.
Nice.
But I think it'd be awesome if you could find the same amount of hope in making small changes to flies and such.
Hmm.
Like brown versus
dark
green.
Yeah,
I know. Like that doesn't play into me as much either. Yeah. But yeah, good point.
Halloween mop.
They were on dark all of the
time. Oh, it's Halloween mop time, huh?
Yeah. I was just gonna say, like, I do sometimes go like oddball when it's slow. And I've had success doing that sometimes where the conventional tactics or conventional flies, I should say, aren't working to the level that I think they should be given the conditions. And sometimes going bright orange or going beadless on my nymphs or, you know, just kind of pushing my extremes one way or another, supernatural or very natural or really gaudy and kind of outlandish.
I want a supernatural sometimes, fly.
Yeah, supernatural.
Superfly.
The Troutbin superfly.
Oh, yeah. Superfly.
Yeah, sometimes it just really seems to be the ticket to just change things up quite a bit. And I don't know whether that's because fish are maybe in some sections, some rivers, they're just accustomed, educated. Dom, you and I have talked about the year that they ran some competition fly angling on one of our local rivers and how we saw a change in the types of flies that fish were willing to take in that river. And I just wonder that sometimes if that's why changing the fly type so dramatically can sometimes make a difference.
It's almost cryptic. So I'll say they're eating beads less. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
They're eating bright beads less. That's the first time I ever saw that. And Trevor and I have talked about it right after they had a competition. You know, guys were like on the water for basically 3 days and on the same beats of water, the same pieces of water for 3 days. Everybody using copper, silver, and gold beads. And I mean it, right after that, you know, I went and fished it and it's not like they wouldn't eat it, but it was way better when I got away from beads. And that's like 3 or 4 years ago, the first time I experienced that on this water we're talking about.
Yep.
And now, Austin, you brought it up when we talked about what has changed in fly fishing a couple weeks ago. You said like everybody's out there nymphing with, you know, tight line tactics. And what goes along with that, if you're Euro nymphing, you know, you're not adding weight to the leader, so you're fishing beads. And once again, sure, there are black beads. And now I think it's kind of neat. You have these matte colored beads that are like dull grays and browns and olives. And that's cool. And speckled black. And you know what I'm saying? That's neat. But let's say most people are fishing the bright beads. And there is no doubt in my mind anymore,
that they are shying away from beads, not just once in a while, but a lot of time.
Pretty soon, the dead drift is going to be dead. We're going to have to drag it across all lanes.
That's right.
Oh, no. They see a lot of that. They see a lot of that.
Yeah, Austin right. said this you're not right. too long ago either. Like the old school patterns are going to come back around.
Yeah. Right?
That's, kinda, that's where I am. And I've been on the water, I think, the last 3 days and three different waters. But each one of them, I spent some time just fishing what I call fur nymphs. You can call them waltz worms, but there's some crest bugs and this and that. Just fur on a hook.
Beadless?
Beadless, yes. And I use split shot above it, 5, 6. I don't drop shot. Well, I could, but I haven't been. Point is, just fur on a hook, different kinds of fur. Sometimes a little bit of flash in there, a little bit of antron, this and that. And like you said, Austin, I mean, the old school patterns are going to come back. When everybody's fishing one thing, and they actually are changing what trout eat, well, then you got to do the opposite. We talked about this, what, season 7, I think. Beginning, we had two podcasts on angler pressure, what it does to the fish and what it does to the fishing. And I will say, like, just 8 or 9 months ago, I was still very skeptical of, like, yeah, these rivers don't get that much pressure. And now I'm telling you, man, by going away from beads and just going to fur a lot of times, that's making a big difference for me.
And that makes sense. I think we could expect that the trout would react in a way that, you know, brings them safety.
But that goes along with what you're saying there, Trevor, like do the extremes. And I don't know if it's extreme to just fish a bead, but that's something you could do to your rig that is radically going to change how the flies drift even and what they look like.
Yeah.
Fish the extremes. I like that concept for solving this problem.
I like it.
So when you talk about going without beads, are you going both the bottom fly and the tag fly? Like, do you think if you were to go with a bottom fly that had a bright bead on it and the top fly didn't have a bead, do you think that bottom fly would almost spook the fish away from the top fly?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do, Bill. And when I do this, the fur nymph thing, I keep it pure, so to speak. Every once in a while on the top fly, I'll put like a silver bead, like a 2 millimeter silver bead, whatever, copper or silver bead, a bright one. And it's really small, but I say every once in a while, because really what I start out, if I'm thinking like, let's switch to fur nymphs, I'm talking just two or just one. Fur nymph, a little bit of split shot. It doesn't have to be heavy split shot. Often it's lighter than the flies were. You get my point. That's what changes. But yeah, I do think, Bill, like why not keep it pure? Yeah. I mean, if it's 20 inches away, that could definitely change what I think is going to make a difference. You know, I want to keep it pure.
Makes sense. Mm.
Man, yeah, I agree with mostly with what everybody said. I think I apply all those tactics. When the going gets tough at times, I do think we can get carried away with the move quick and with general patterns, personally, especially during the height of the hatch season. And I'll just kind of go past experience the last couple years. You know, I think understanding the emerging insects and what's about to emerge in your watershed can be critically important in kind of cracking the code when things can get tough, right? And yeah, you can move quick with the general patterns and you're probably going to do okay. But I think there's also an opportunity there to understand that just because, you know, you might have a blanket full river of sulfur duns, right? Doesn't mean the fish aren't keying in on a, I'm trying to think what happened, like a slate drake nymph. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Why not a pseudo cleon though, Matt?
Well, you know,
let's use that as an example.
That's too easy. I know they're the only thing. They're the only thing hatching. So that's not hard to crack. but I think that's changed days for me where, you know, big salmon flies are hatching and I'm fishing a soft hackle under the surface because they're hitting emerging caddis flies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the easiest thing to do is to throw on the big bug. Or so, you know, if you really dig deep, I think you can crack some codes at times when fishing's tough. And the other thing is the depth that you're targeting these fish, especially in the summer months and the spring. Right. You can vary that dropper or put an emerger on, and you'd be shocked at sometimes what that can do to your success rate.
Even if you're changing the depth of where you're fishing the streamer. Often, you know, I'm trying to keep the streamer in sight. I fall into that habit because I love seeing what I'm doing to my streamer, you know, like using the, something I could see and then keeping it higher in the water column. And that's great. That's fun. But then if I take that same streamer and get it deep enough that I can't see it, that makes a big difference.
Right.
I like what you're saying there, dude, like cracking a code. There is a code. And what Austin, you said about always having hope.
Yeah, right.
And to me, I say never blame the fish. It's not the fish's fault. It's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, you get those days where nothing seems to work. There probably was something that you missed. But like, there's a code. I'm with you.
Sure.
Be observant.
What would you say percentage-wise when we talk about this, right? Are we confident saying, you know, 365 days a year, all of us fish for the most part, you know, 65% of the time or 70% of the time, you can get away with some very strong general confidence patterns and do fairly well?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's less than that?
I feel like it's more than that.
More than that?
If you find the right size, right? I mean, if I fish a waltz, for example, beaded or unbeaded, or if you fish a pheasant tail, beaded or unbeaded,
right?
Come on. I mean, if you find the right size, that looks like a slate drake, it looks like a sulfur. Hell, it could even look like a stonefly, I suppose, if it was big enough. You might be missing a few appendages, but it could convince some trout. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's like 80 or 90%. I can get away with this confidence general.
Yeah.
I think that matches up with what biologists see when they look at the overall percentage of a trout's diet that is different types of like small invertebrates, you know, versus vertebrates or whatever. And as I do think as fish get bigger, there's obviously a changeover. We talked about this in the past, like from strictly invertebrates to like pescatarian or kind of eating more.
I know.
Yeah, they get more cannibalistic, right, as they get bigger, brown trout. But
very cartilaginous.
Oh, very cartilaginous. But brown trout, among the normal range that we're catching.
They still like pseudos.
Yeah, right. 96% of what they're eating is small and brown or small and gray.
Yeah, right.
And so if
everything
you play,
looks like a pheasant tail.
Right. And so it's just implausible to think that you could ever not have success if you're presenting a fly appropriately at the right size, like you mentioned. And removing the variable potentially of bead to unbead. So like maybe within a certain set of variables, if you can work within that set of variables, you can find success on almost every day. But I don't know.
But like Matt's saying too, I mean, if they're eating one thing, especially on top, and maybe I say that just because we can see it, we can see that success on top and you go, well, I got a damn good drift. I'll change the fly. I got a good drift. There's a rising trout. Getting a good drift over them, I'll change the fly. And yeah, by getting something that sits real low and maybe even more in the water than on top of the water, you know, emerger concept, it changes something and all of a sudden the trout eats. I mean, that's what you're saying, Matt. Like you can crack that code.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's cool.
I think you kind of have to know your river. Mm. If you are fishing a river that has a ton of insects and different hatches, I think that's when something like Matt's talking about, like really knowing the hatches, it could make a huge difference where they're keying in on that one insect that's, you know, the nymphs are active, but you don't see anything, but underneath the surface, they're moving around. And so there's not many of those river systems that I fish, but there's a few of them that they really key into certain bugs.
Yeah. When you guys are fishing fast, both you and Josh said that you like to fish fast then. Well, when the action slows down, you're saying you'll go fast. Like when you move fast then, what are you looking for? Are you looking for productive water? I mean, a productive water type. Like, oh, they're sitting in the riffles. Oh, I finally figured it out. They're in deep, shady areas. Or are you just looking for hungry patches of trout?
Both. I guess when I fish fast, I'm still fishing all the water types because I don't know what water type they're in. So instead of making 40 good casts into one run, I'm making like 5 to 10, maybe not like even that. But I'm basically, you know, think of it when you're playing Contra and you got spreader, right? And so
with or without the cheat code.
With the cheat code.
Okay, good. Make it all the way through. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, you're covering everything.
Yeah.
You know, from bank to bank. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I agree. It's just less casts. It's like you stop, you make 5 casts, you move on.
Mm-hmm. If you're not a good wader, if you're not good at covering water, if you're uncomfortable in the water, boy, that's not a good strategy then, right? Because all you're doing is walking and setting up and making
and
a cast.
And scaring everything.
And getting out, yeah. And when you do get hung up, I've seen that in the last couple of weeks while I'm guiding. I just am once again reminded that people are very much slowed down by the inefficiencies of waiting. And like when I get hung, if I'm nymphing and I get hung up, I don't care. I'm like, I don't even stand there and go, bang, bang, I'm pulling back. Oh, I hope it comes out. That's not going to come out, right? I change the angle. And so I wade 3 steps toward it, usually get to rod tip on the other side, pop it up. And that's not a big deal to me or to you guys. Same thing, kind of the same thing with the streamer. It's not a big deal. I don't care. I hardly care. I'm like, that's too bad. And then it's a reason to move. It's just another reason to move.
Yeah.
And I got a waiting staff and I'm just popping over to wherever I want to be. I can almost wade anywhere I want to go. And you guys are the same way. But if you don't have that facility and you're not set up to do that, then you can't fish fast. That's not a good strategy then when things are slow, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Another thing I like to think about, since we're on the topic of speed, not necessarily wading speed, but drift speed. And that correlates with water types often, of course. But some days I feel like slowing down your presentation can affect a change in success. So if I'm fishing, let's say a walking pace run that's 2.5 feet deep, and my flies are moving slightly slower than the surface of the water, kind of riding that sweet zone in the strike zone there. Still underneath, not getting needs to feel like the presentations are clean, feel like my flies are, good confidence flies. The next thing I may do is change the angle of my sighter or add weight to my system and try to slow those flies down even more.
Yeah.
Slow them down. And then maybe I'll do the opposite. I'll try to lead them faster. Maybe even animate the flies a little bit if they're nymphs. Maybe a twitch of the rod tip up and down, slight animations, subtle changes like that. I think I've definitely found success in.
I like that.
Yeah, it's
me
good.
Too. When I'm nymphing, that's the main thing, Austin. If I'm nymphing, the action's slow, and I want to stick with it, then that's probably the main thing I'm going to do. I am going to get really stubborn about getting low and slow. Because 90% of the time, that's the answer. And right, I get it. You can drift all the way through, 3 or 4 times. Didn't even touch. Great. Isn't that fun? Not hanging up. Oh, isn't that great? You're not catching fish either. And if you're not, then get low, get slow, get hung up once in a while. Tap, tap, stick. Oh, well. And I'll get really stubborn about that. That's the number one thing I do, Austin. What did Sloop all? You're bringing up Sloop. Sloop always said, like,
it's been a while.
He would always say, like, just get closer, get closer. Basically, I summarize it to say tighter targets. Know exactly where you're going to fish. You kind of forget the stuff beside it. Pick your favorite spot. Go ahead, cherry pick. Go up the water fast. But when you get to a spot that you like, now I'm going to present, my best casts right here.
Yeah.
This is it. Pick your confidence water now.
Right.
And
they don't eat here, then
that's right.
We got a problem. Bigger
right,
problem.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Find water like that. I think that's good advice. As fly anglers and tires, we understand the value of having the right tool for the job. AvidMax.com offers over 20,000 products and the knowledge to help you find the right tool for your job, whether that be at the tying bench or on the water. Listeners of the Trout Bitten Podcast receive a special one-time discount code at AvidMax.com. Enter the code TB10 at checkout on full-priced items to save 10% off your order. Orders over $25 ship for free, so you can put more gas in your tank or beer in your cooler. For all things fly fishing and tying, elevate your game with AvidMax. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure.
Austin, you said this, but I was thinking even we're talking about slowing down the drift, but don't always just assume that that's like, it might be super counterintuitive, but I remember a day, like a really specific day on water over by you, Austin, and it was really tough and I could not get anything and it didn't matter how slow or how perfect the drift was. And then finally I was like, you know, I think it was almost accidental. It was kind of like sloppy. I was sort of like half speed leading. I went from like a 75 degree angle in the water down to like a 30. And it was sort of like almost dragging the nymphs through. And it's like, oh, fish on. And I did it again. Oh, fish on. What on earth? Yeah. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, that doesn't look natural. But maybe there was something different about my leader that day slightly. Something was different that was causing them to impulsively eat that when I did that.
Do you think that change that you just described allowed you to be in contact faster with the flies or more of a direct line to the resistance of those flies that maybe could have been missing strikes?
That's a great theory.
Sometimes they eat them really fast or faster than other days. They'll hold on to them with less time than
It felt impulsive. And so that's a good theory for that, for sure.
That's nice.
Yeah.
But that's like the opposite of low and slow. Sometimes you lead them through.
Yeah.
Right. I think, you know, there's a lot of complexity to the nymphing game. And it's not just about depth, how deep are they, but about speed. And yet we can be in control of that speed. As time goes on, the nymphing game takes on trends. People kind of keep doing this similar things as the next guy, right? And right now it's like, oh, thin and lighter, basically longer drops. And man, if we're eating it on the drop, that's great. Lots of times they're not. So again, like Austin said, I'm going to get down low and get really deliberate. And that seals the deal. But if it doesn't, then like, yeah, Josh, that's cool. Like just bring it through or tap it. Yeah, whatever. Just kind of, just the little mini pops, like half inch pops, if you can do that, you know? That's neat. I love that stuff. I guess here's one of my tips, I suppose. No matter what tactic I'm doing, whether it's a streamer or a dry or a web fly or a nymph, you need to have confidence that what you're doing now isn't working. Basically, I'm saying you want to have confidence in your tactic. You need to be able to look at it and go, I did what I wanted to do there. Okay, that didn't work.
Great point.
Yeah.
They didn't eat it. And then you just kind of, you have to believe the fish and you got to go, all right, I'm going to change something. And I think that's sort of the heart of this whole thing. Like, what do you do when the fish won't eat? We got to change something. You're not going to keep doing the same thing. The easiest thing to change is the water. Bill and Josh said, move fast. The next easiest thing to change is the fly. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the next easiest thing to change is go from streamers to nymphs or to dries, whatever. Right. But whatever you're changing, then give it a little bit of time. If you acknowledge this is a tough day, give it a little bit of time. And if they don't eat it, you have to just be able to look at it and go, that's it. I did what I wanted to do. Now I'm going to change again. And now I'm going to change again. You can spend your whole, you'll feel like you're spending your whole day changing, but at least you can get to the end of the day and you go, you know what? I fished well in these 10 or 11 or 12 different ways or whatever, maybe more than that. You know, I did it well. And you can walk away going, all right, I did what I could. There's always going to be something left on the table. You don't have enough time to try everything. But I think that's what we all want to do.
Yeah.
That's what we all want to be able to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very important. I think, too, knowing, like, one, never compare yourself to other anglers or other anglers' success.
That's
good. And know where your competencies lie. So if you're trying to learn the nymph game, you're trying to learn how to tight line, you know, maybe they are eating excellent dead drifts that day. And that's what you're trying to do, but they're not excellent yet. There it takes time to build skills and to build confidence there. So being able to recognize maybe how well you're doing something, which comes within time, is a big deal also. You can't expect to go out there every day and knock it out.
Exactly. They're tough. A lot of times they're just tough.
You know, one of my favorite things to do when it's slow is just find a shady spot on the bank and crack a broken heels and embrace it.
I know.
You guys have all heard me say, oh, there's no fish in there. When I'm not catching fat, there's no fish in there.
No fish in there.
And there's no fish in there.
That's right. Where's the next spot?
In there. No, not even where's the next spot. Yes, there's a nice shady spot on the bank over there.
They'll be eaten by the time I get back in there.
That's exactly right.
You guys have come a long way since we were picking up Dom skunk beers in the woods and drinking them. Now you're drinking IPAs.
That's the rule. Matt, tell everybody the rule. If you find a beer
Yeah, if you find a beer unopened in the woods, you got to drink it.
Right. In the water. In the water.
Wasn't there a day when they just kept appearing or something?
And Dom and I, during the first day of rifle, there was beers in the woods and we were drinking them and people were shooting at us.
That's a good summary. That's pretty much how the day went. Amazing. Weren't there roosters in the parking lot?
Well, I'll tell you that back then, that was the only thing in that parking lot was roosters, right? You didn't see anybody in that place.
You never find quality beer in the river.
No, it's always Bush Light.
Yeah.
That makes you cringe. But you know what? You suck it up. You crack that beer and you figure it out.
You guys know I have never come across a full beer can in the river. Not once in my life.
Too bad.
Not I bet once you in my life.
I'm in the double digits on that. And Matt and I have done it a couple times.
Yeah. Never.
That's
once.
The rule, though. You find it, Josh. You got to drink it right there. No questions.
Not by yourself.
Well, why not?
If you're fishing alone and you found a full can of beer, would you still drink it?
Be like, yes, that's the rule.
The rule's a rule.
What's going to happen?
What's wrong with you, Austin?
What's going to happen?
That's a pretty disciplined.
It's a gift from the gods.
Honor system. It's all about your integrity.
Let there be beer.
You refocus.
It's simple.
And you get back on that damn water and catch your son of a...
Do you have integrity or do you not?
That's right. Yeah. Austin, it's like self-discipline.
I was hoping it was
like
more of
like
a group tradition.
I was hoping.
Because it'd be way less fun if you're just by yourself.
Right, just by
yourself. If we ever find Dom dead, we might know where to look. In the woods by an empty can of beer.
You keep saying woods, though. I'll tell you, if I find like a six-pack, you know, that's been there for like a
bacon
year.
Bacon in the sun. Yeah.
Right, by some pine tree. I'm like, nope, not drinking that.
Come on.
Where we find them is in the water. It's usually from people on a tube or something, like kids tube and it falls out. Did I ever tell you guys, Pat and I found on one of the braided sections of one of our favorite rivers, we found one of those soft pack, like 12 packs of Bush. You know what I mean? Like the soft pack, right? It's like a soft cooler.
Yeah.
Wow.
There were 11 beers in a 12 pack.
Ooh. It's like Pat Christmas and I were like, morning.
The rule is we got to drink them. we drank two. We're like, leave the rest for the next angler.
Yeah,
we
right.
did. We drank two. We had a sandwich. We had an early lunch. We had like two beers. I was like, dude, I'm not drinking like all these beers. But we thought about it because that's the rule.
Yeah, that's funny.
We did. We that left the awesome. Rest there. They hadn't been there for very long.
Changing back into our topic here. One other thing.
Keep us on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, button. Right. One other thing we haven't talked about, but something that I've done a couple winters in a row is use slower fishing and days that are particularly difficult, because I don't always get to pick the days that I'm out there. But if I get out there and it's just a particularly slow day in the winter, which is already potentially slower than the rest of the year, I've used that as an opportunity to work on some tactics that I don't always spend enough time on the rest of the year because I'm busy catching fish.
That sounds like you're giving up.
Be nice.
I know it does. Well, it's changing the reason that you're out there from fish catching necessarily to perfecting a skill.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
And then you can get to the end of the day and you can say, I was just working on tactics.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't
exactly.
really trying to catch them. Austin does that all the time.
Ah, they weren't on streamers.
You say Austin does that all the time.
Bill, I don't expect you, Mr. 280 days on the water to get it. But seriously, I feel like with some tactics, I don't get enough days on the water working on them to get good at them. And streamers is definitely one of those areas that I've spent winters working on casting and working on feeling more comfortable just manipulating that fly in the water. And I do feel like I fished streamers during peak season a lot more this year because I had a lot more confidence in them from the time that I spent working on them in the wintertime. And I caught a lot more fish this year on streamers than I've ever caught before because I spent that time. So I felt like it was a bit of an investment in my technical skill because I wasn't able to pick the days that I was out there. I don't have enough days to work on everything I want to work on. And it felt like, it felt like insurance on the day to be able to work on some of those tactics.
And honestly, I was joking around about it, like saying, "What you can say then at the end of the day, I wasn't really trying to catch fish there for the last half of the day. I was just working on this.
I really wanted to.
Yeah. Right. If I really wanted to. Austin, how's it go?
I could have caught as many fish if I really wanted to.
Right. So you can get to the end of the day, though, and you can say, I wasn't really trying to catch them.
Justifications.
But honestly, like while you're fishing, it frees you up, right? Yeah. You know what I mean, Trevor? It kind of makes you feel like, eh, good. Like the pressure.
Totally.
You shouldn't be putting pressure on yourself anyway to catch fish, but
right on.
That's
a controllable outcome. You may not be able to catch the fish on command, but you can.
That's a great point.
Yeah, you can get better.
I'd like to ask the question from, a guide perspective.
Mm.
Let's say you're out on the water, you have a client, they really want to learn the nymph game or whatever, a streamer presentation, and the fishing appears to be slow.
Yeah.
Though you know the presentations aren't on point. And as a guide, you want to do everything you can to make that outcome result in a fish netted for that person.
Sure.
But sometimes I'm resistant to change because I know we haven't really gotten to that place yet.
Right.
That client may be questioning, why aren't we changing lots of stuff and lots of stuff? And in my mind, well, they're probably on a dead drift near the bottom on a slow presentation, and we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that when you're with someone on the water?
There's four guides here. Matt, Bill, what do you think?
Yeah. I would do my best in explaining just that, Austin. Like, you know, look, there's willing fish down there. We just haven't hit the right drift and the right presentation for those fish to eat. So we're going to continue to work on that before we start trying to do too many things. And I kind of harp on that at the beginning of that lesson. If you have a beginner angler, mm-hmm. you know, the worst thing you can do in fly fishing is to try to learn everything. Yeah. We've acknowledged that here, right? And today, this is what we're going to work on, you know, and look, it's called fishing, not catching, right? So we're going to teach a skill, work on that skill, and hopefully, you know, you're rewarded with that type of focus.
Yeah.
Because it's getting people to focus. I mean, that's tough as a guy.
That's big. Good point.
Then I crawl up on the bank and crack that Bush Light.
Oh, yeah.
I would.
Rusty can. I don't care.
I would change something because I think.
You don't rust. It's aluminum. Come on, Dom.
Let's say you fished for 2 hours. You didn't catch anything. I would change something drastically because with that change, the client probably then gains some confidence that, hey, we're changing something. Maybe this new tactic is going to, I don't know, it could work. It may not work, but it at least changes them and it keeps their head in the game. And that's the hardest thing in a slow day is to keep your head in the game.
You probably do that for yourself too, right, Bill?
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh man, I do that a lot.
I've gone through days when it's slow and I've changed. And at some point I turn into I'm tying and changing more than I'm fishing. And so I'm just going to fish what I have on and try to focus.
That word focus keeps coming back up. Matt said it, you're saying it, and that's for me too. It's all about focus. I think the more you focus on one thing, the better it becomes. And then sometimes just changing, we're talking about nymphing a lot, just changing the sighter type or the length, or I'll change my whole leader system. Instead of fishing what I call a standard mono rig, I will fish a micro. Or maybe I'll fish dries, whatever. I'm saying even like within the nymph game, there's so many changes that I can make that will refocus me. And on a dry fly, it's very much the same thing. Instead of just the dry fly, I'll start thinking about, I'm going to work on this curve cast, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I could skitter it without incurring drag right after the skitter. You know, there is something I can change, something that will refocus me. And I think that's what it's all about. For me, it's that focus that keeps me fishing. And whatever brings me back into that hope, that belief, like, this will do it. This change is going to do it. That gives me that new hope, that renewed, like you said, Bill, you can do that with your clients. But I do that all the time with myself. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes to get me refocused.
Right on.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think we've provided so many good options that you can kind of throw in the quiver.
Mm.
And Dom, I think you alluded to it earlier, but have a plan. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe focus on three or four of those changes when you go out. Like, you know, all right, if the fishing's slow today, I'm gonna do X, Y, and Z. And I'm gonna run through that, right? And then the next time if maybe you switch it up a little bit. But at some point, I think we all probably have those handful of things that are our go-tos, right?
Yeah,
and
then
when the conditions get really tough, then we have all these other things we pull out to try to crack the code. And so for listeners that are, you know, well, that's a lot of stuff to potentially incorporate into my game. start slow, right? I think there's a lot of good stuff out here that you can slowly work into your game.
There's always something to change. That's one of the reasons we all like fly fishing. We've talked about all the different fly types you can change to. And then within those, fishing those dries, you can have multiple different ways you're doing it, obviously with the nymphs and the streamers and even wets too. That's why I choose a fly rod. You can do all that stuff. And there's always something that'll give me like a reason to believe, something new. And sometimes you just sit on the bank like Josh.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I made it.
Take some pretty pictures.
Yep, that's not a bad
there you go.
Just don't watch point right there.
Yeah, don't go watching other anglers. That's something that I'll tell you what. When it's a slow day, but you run into some guy that's up there just whacking fish. Oh
yeah.
What do you do then?
Throw the beer at him.
Yeah.
Pretend that it's not happening.
Just high holing real close.
What you using?
Yeah. Right.
Bunyan bug.
Bunyan bug.
The end of my line.
Bill, you got something?
Yeah, when it's slow, I try to really focus on that first drift and not. So let's say I get into a nice looking spot. Instead of like working my way into that, a lot of times I'll wade a couple extra steps so I know that the first presentation through that run is really good, because maybe, you know, maybe there's a couple sloppy casts that would come in if I didn't take my time and wade into position that could spook that fish or displace the fish. Maybe the fish is moving a lot when my fly hits the water because the water's clear and it's, you know, it's turning and coming back to it and it's not eating it, versus if I'm taking my time, waiting in a position, hitting the top of the run, letting it come through. It's a tactic when it's slow that I'll kind of focus on a lot.
That's something I learned from you, Bill. Did an article series on that, when the first cast matters most. We talked about how you think the streamer is really important, like that, with the first cast, you know, wait into position instead of wasting the cast 5 feet below him that might drag him out of there, but then he's not going to eat because he's kind of in bad position and now he's done. He's not going to look at it twice. Instead of doing that, you're always saying like you'll wade that extra 3 feet or whatever it is and make sure your first cast is the best cast. I agree with you. I think that's even extra important on these slow days. Do you guys agree? Like many days are slow because the fish are just sensitive, not necessarily because they're hungry, but because they're the conditions often are making them sensitive. Maybe they're sensitive because Josh said like somebody fished through like, or maybe even 2 hours ago, they're still a little sensitive.
Do you guys think the most predictable bad fishing, at least for me, is the day after a front comes through?
I can't find that correlation, but tell me what you think.
Let's say a big pressure change. It went from 80 degrees or 70 degrees, and now the high the next day is 50. Mm-hmm. And usually during those days, huge pressure change, and there's a lot of wind. If I were to predict I'm going to have crappy fishing, I would look at that and say, okay, high of 80, the next day high of 50. Okay, there's a big swing there. Going to be high winds. I would expect to have crappy fishing that day. And so I know going into it, I know that it's going to be difficult and I may have to use different tactics than if it were the weather was consistently the same for like 4 days.
Have you guys picked up on any of like your favorite directions for wind for the majority of our places? Like I've found, and this is one of those things that you get used to looking at for deer hunting, especially with bow hunting. And I found that, well, for bow hunting, I love any northeasterly wind. So it's blowing down to the southwest, which is usually indicative of a front coming in, specifically a cold front coming in. It's horrible for most of the spots that I like to fish because it pushes the leader the wrong way.
Well, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Bill, I guess, if I've had that correlation, but I've also haven't paid close enough attention to that to say one way or another if a front coming through is impactful on the fishing.
Did you chart it, Bill? Did you put it in a spreadsheet?
I haven't put it in a spreadsheet. I just know of many times that I've gone fishing after that front comes through, and it's just, I don't know.
We talked about this on the night fishing series that I charted the barometer for quite a while, 2 years maybe. I just couldn't find a correlation. I thought there were other factors that mattered a lot more, water condition, but especially light conditions, things like that. I would love to have information about that.
I noticed it a lot more in the fall and then like the March time frame, because there'll be those big swings in temperature or with fronts coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the time of year where you get those changes. Mm-hmm. Things aren't as stable.
I think it's got to, like what you were saying, Dom, I think it has to have an impact on the fish too. Sure. I know that maybe it's hard to find the correlation, but if it has such an impact on movement of other animals in the woods, why wouldn't it have an impact mm-hmm. on the fish? It's not like water protects them from feeling barometric pressure, I'm assuming at least.
Right on.
But they're always feeling, I think they're always feeling more pressure than we are.
Sure. Well, and I think if you put all those variables into a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. the chances of one of them sticking out regularly is probably slim to none.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of variables. That's like, the point, right?
Like, oh yeah, like pressure and fronts. And you could always say, well, it was either the fronts, water the pressure, water clarity. Like, you know, it's fun. It's fun to talk about and think about because—
Shitty angling. That's another
Do you
factor.
Suck? Hey, maybe you just suck.
But that might be it. stepping over dollars to pick up pennies, right? Like maybe focus on your fishing technique. And
at what point do you look in the mirror and just say, yeah, well, maybe I suck?
That's what I'm saying. Never blame the fish. Always tell yourself you suck. Maybe at the end of the day, on a walkout, you go, damn, that was tough. Especially if you got a buddy and you could kind of trust each other. They're like, we fished pretty well. We covered a whole bunch of techniques and a whole bunch of water. They just wouldn't eat. Never listen to the people in a parking lot, though.
No.
I've made this point recently to a couple guests of mine. You know, somebody passes, how was the fishing? I'm like, dude, I never ask people that. I don't care. I don't care how your fishing was because, first of all, I don't believe you because you're going to lie. Everybody lies. And they might say that it was bad or it was good. Either way, they're lying to you. I don't care. One way or the other. I don't want to know how other people's fishing was unless it's a trusted friend. That throws me off. But anyway, if it's you and your buddy and you can't get anything going, sometimes you say, all right, I'm not just blaming myself. Sometimes it is the fish. We all have those days, right? I mean, there's just nothing you could seem to get going. You know, you caught one and missed one. That was it.
Yep.
Yeah. So I wonder, you primarily fish the limestone streams. And I think I think those stay more stable during those bigger swings.
Pressure swings.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second.
And temperature. No, temperature.
Temperature-wise, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. You didn't mean pressure, because the pressure would affect the limestone streams exactly the same, right, as freestone. Yeah.
I feel like there was an easy answer out there like that, a constant variable. We would know by now. Somebody would have figured it out, and everyone would be going fishing on the same days, and everybody would not be fishing on the same days.
It's almost like that now.
It's just not.
Going on the sunny days.
Yeah, it just doesn't work like that.
No. Hey, anything else, guys?
The one other thing I do is if it's tough fishing, I'll relocate if I know the river well to a spot mm-hmm. that I know gets very little pressure. And if fishing sucks there, then I'll go to another stream, usually a smaller stream, and fish just like a mountain stream or brook trout stream where there's maybe those fish are more willing. And so,
freebies.
Yeah, I'll go get some freebies.
I like to go to the local club and fish for the
pellet time.
Just remind myself what a boss I am at fishing.
And then I hold up that 28-inch rainbow slob and I go, look at that.
Look at that.
Look what I did.
Yeah.
Put a 5-gallon net.
Put that straight on Instagram and then sit on the bank and watch the comments roll in.
That's right.
Tell me how good I am, everyone.
That's what it's really all about.
Then I like to share the comments. I'll screenshot the comments and just post them like the stories section. Look at that. I'm getting...
I like it. You print them
out. I got
out,
the fish, perfect. Now I got the accolades. I want to share that too.
Well, that's why we're out there.
Let's go.
Pretty much, right? Yeah. Now look at me. All right. We done? We good?
All right.
I think we're good.
All right.
Smart ass Trevor had to
wrap it up.
Come on, Trevor.
Come on, dude. Come on, man.
Come on.
All right. There it is. How to save the toughest days on the water. Remember, everybody struggles out there. And really, it's those tough times that inspire us to refine our tactics or to tackle the next technique in fly fishing. Because we kind of get the sense that it's always possible to get into a few trout if we can just find the right combination of water type and fly type and match that with a skilled presentation. So while we don't accept failure, we do acknowledge that it's part of the game. Try to keep frustration at bay. Instead, when things aren't working, make a new plan and follow through until that doesn't work either. But keep changing something. Do it often enough to remain hopeful and focused out there. In the end, it always comes down to the same trout-bitten mantra. Fish hard. All right then, Matt Grobe, will you read us out?
Here we go. Remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers. The Trout Bitten website hosts over 1,000 articles with endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and tags too. Be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel, now featuring the Trout Bitten Tips series, the Fish and Film series, and the Trout Bitten Fly Box, all in collaboration with Wilds Media. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment, because that really helps. Till next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Pretty soon, the dead drift's going to be dead.
Let's go.
I think it's like 80 or 90%.
Tell me how good I am, everyone.
I want a supernatural fly.
Superfly.
I don't like that.
Austin does that all the time.
They weren't on streamers.
Then I crawl up on the bank and crack that Bush Light.
Just remind myself what a boss I am at fishing.